Welcome to our next episode of City Speak. Today on the show, we're talking about a painful and increasingly common incident in America, and that's mass shootings. Our guests are a few of a growing number of local leaders who have had to leave their communities through both the crises of the shootings themselves and the healing process afterwards. For this episode, we are joined by two incredible leaders, Councilmember Henry Lowe of Monterey Park, California, and Mayor Nancy Rotering of Highland Park, Illinois. During both of these leaders' tenures as mayor, their cities experienced the thing that no local leader ever wants to see happen in their community. On July 4th, 2022, about 15 minutes into an Independence Day parade in Highland Park, Illinois, a suburb outside of Chicago, a gunman fired a rifle from the roof of a nearby building, committing a mass shooting that ultimately killed 7 people and wounded 48 others. Just over half a year later, a similar event took place across the country in Monterey Park, California, just outside of Los Angeles. On January 21st, 2023, at a Lunar New Year event, a gunman entered a local dance studio and committed a mass shooting, killing 11 people and injuring 9 others. Almost immediately, both Mayor Rotering and Councilmember Lowe, who was then serving as mayor, became the public faces of their cities. In this episode, Clarence was lucky to speak with both of them about what that experience was like and what they wish they had known beforehand. First, you'll hear from Mayor Nancy Rotering from Highland Park, Illinois.
First of all, it was great meeting you in Berlin, Germany, where both of us was talking about the issue of hate and how you lead and manage through tragedies. We hear a lot about mass shootings far too often in America. And one thing people always say is that they never thought it would happen in their community. What was your experience? And if you don't mind sharing, what were the first few hours like after learning about the shooting for you and your community?
Thank you so much for having me join you today. You know, among America's mayors, there's sort of this refrain of not if, but when. But we really don't think it's ever going to happen in our hometown. We in our city hadn't had a homicide in over 20 years. Things are considered pretty safe, but even if they're not, I mean, it's such a public epidemic. So within the very first hours of the aftermath, I was fortunate to receive messages from several mayors who had also gone through this horrible tragedy. One in particular, Nan Whaley from Dayton, Ohio, sent me electronically. There's literally a playbook for mayors of what to do in the aftermath of a mass shooting. First, there's a protocol of what to do in the first 24 hours and what to expect. And then there's this 198-page book that sort of guides you as you now continue through the rest of forever, basically, because this doesn't go away. This kind of trauma doesn't leave. The immediate situation for us was that we had a shooter who was still on the loose for about 6 hours after his 1 minute of devastating carnage. So we had not only a manhunt going on, and it turned out it was a multi-state manhunt, but also had people hiding for hours with people they didn't know. It was just, you know, plus we had, thankfully, mutual aid swarming in from our surrounding area, helping our first responders, because no community is ready to deal with these kinds of wounds and this kind of carnage on their streets. So there are a lot of pieces to this, and it is more horrible than anybody can ever describe. We read about it almost daily, if not more than daily, in this nation. Your reflections on this past weekend, that we've become inured to it, and we have to stop being inured to it. We need to stop normalizing this kind of horrific violence and say that we are the only country in our peer nations in this world who live this way. You and I were in Berlin speaking to folks from other countries who could not understand why the United States allows this to be such a pervasive threat against humanity. So there's a lot for any mayor in the immediate aftermath. Truly, I wouldn't want anyone to prepare themselves, because this really shouldn't be, unless you're in the military, you shouldn't be having to prepare for this kind of carnage. Obviously, we did tabletop exercises. Our team had run through the what ifs And thankfully, they did everything right. They really did. They were on the scene immediately because of where it happened and who was involved with the parade. But there's no real way to prepare a community for this. And frankly, I'm going to say, nor should we. We need to take the steps to make it stop.
So as mayor, you had to act fast. And everybody has this view that if you want something done, you ask a mayor to get it done. But in a crisis like this, you had to work with law enforcement. You had to think about apprehending the shooter, working with first responders to get medical attention to those who were injured, the families looking for their loved ones, inform the public. I mean, there's so many things that you had to think about. What advice would you give to local leaders and how you managed this? And how did you manage all of this?
Well, we're fortunate. We have a council manager form of government. So we have professional staff who had done these tabletop exercises, who had been in touch. A few important lessons that I would absolutely want people to know are the following. One, communicate honestly, transparently, and frequently with your community. They're frightened. They're in shock. They're in pain. The only way that you can help them is by being consistent and frequent in your communications. And then the other is have those relationships that you will need already established. We meet quarterly with all of our sister governments. So when somebody from the Department of Justice said, you're going to want to get to know the folks who run the schools, we already had those relationships established. We already had the superintendent on speed dial, the park district, the township, all the different levels of government. We already had those relationships. If you don't have those relationships now, you need to establish those, not just for this, but for any tragedy. You want to have that team of elected officials and their administrators on board and already have those relationships established. So I would say those two pieces were absolutely critical, but really the most important is being able to communicate frequently and honestly and transparently. You want to have that relationship also established with your constituents. They shouldn't be meeting you for the first time. They shouldn't be meeting your senior staff for the first time. Really important to have that trust already established and have those communications also established. One other thing I want to add, if there are cultural differences, language differences, accessibility differences, be cognizant of those immediately. We had folks who were hearing impaired, who weren't aware and could not get the information that they needed when they should have gotten it. We had folks who spoke other languages. They needed to have accessibility to the information just as quickly as everybody else. Maybe age is an issue. People aren't as savvy with technology. So have those pieces in place. We had a smart 911 system that had already been established, but most people hadn't signed up for it. And none of us knew that we needed to renew every 6 months. So we were like, oh, we're in. We should be getting texts. We never got texts because we hadn't renewed within 6 months. So there are all kinds of tools that are available. Embrace them now. Make them part of your daily life now. And then, heaven forbid, something as horrific as this happens, you have that foundation already established.
So let's go back to a time where, okay, you think things are stabilized, for lack of a better term. That day is over, and now it's July the 7th. You are the leader of your community, and you recognize that work isn't done. The next step is helping your community to find ways to heal. Can you talk about some of the ways you did that?
Personally and collectively, there was a lot of activity. So we created, with the help of the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security, Family Assistance Center at a local high school, 1,200 people a day were seeking therapy in the immediate aftermath. Organic memorials were starting to pop up because we had a 6-block crime scene that was still taped off. So I spent a lot of time in the vicinity of where people were gathering, just being present and just hearing their stories and giving hugs and letting people cry and crying together and just sort of connecting. We found that connecting was crucial. there was a vigil 2 days, I believe 2 days after the shooting. One had happened the day after. We weren't in that place that we felt we were able to provide something that would be meaningful and helpful to people. We needed a couple of days, but we told people that it was coming because everybody was still in shock the day after and frankly, frightened. Even though the shooter had been captured, they felt personally that they were obviously at risk because we all had been at such extreme risk. There also needs to be a recognition of folks come from the outside, and I mean way outside your community, who are well-intended, who bring their own agendas, and be prepared for that. It was both moving and it also verged on the absurd. And I'll just leave it at that. But there are people who this is what they do, as they go to cities that have suffered mass shootings and bring their unique perspective. We'll leave it at that. But you have to recognize that here you have your community that already feels invaded by this onslaught of the press because they're there immediately setting up. And then you have people who are clearly not from the community bringing their agenda. There's a lot of circus almost that comes in the immediate aftermath that I wasn't prepared for. I was more focused on how can I be available to my community versus talking to people who had come from all over the place who wanted their agenda met. Very interesting, something people don't really talk about. And then the most important thing is recognizing that while the world moves at a fast pace and has certain expectations, you need to lean into your own gut and what feels right in terms of timing. By that, I mean, somebody said to me, you'll need to have your memorial done within a year. What are your plans? What we recognized was here are people who have had the most horrific loss or the most horrific wounds and injuries, and they're in the hospital. These folks need plenty of time, plenty of space, plenty of opportunity to work through this year of firsts where they've missed somebody's birthday or an anniversary or a holiday together. There's that empty chair at the dining room table. They are in so much pain, and everybody needs to slow down and recognize this is a grieving process. This is going to take a long time to work through. We also head back to school 2 weeks after this had happened. So we were sort of like, oh my gosh, how are we going to get our children ready to go back to school? We had asked several of them, were you surprised this happened in Highland Park? And none of them said they were surprised. They just thought it would happen in school. Because we've been preparing our children for an active shooter to come into their lives forever, which is a horrible, horrible thing that we've done to that generation. But to then say to them, okay, this just happened to you, and now we're sending you to school where you thought it might, you know, there's that whole piece as well. So just being very mindful, very much listening to your own emotions, your own gut, and spending a lot of time with the community, I think helps as you move forward from that place. That horror.
Yeah, Mayor, I got a chance to get to know you at that conference in Berlin, and we had a chance to talk as Clarence and Nancy, if you will. And you just used the words, there was so much pain in the community. How did you use that pain to turn into an advocate? What about it made you say to yourself, okay, I got a very successful law firm, and I want to now focus more time on this issue in Springfield and DC. What has changed about you?
Well, interestingly, it didn't change on July 4th, 2022. It changed, I believe it was December 14th, 2012, when Sandy Hook happened. And we saw that and could not believe that this nation wasn't taking immediate action. So in Illinois, there was a requirement that new legislation be formed to provide concealed carry. This was under a court order. We were the last state in the nation to pass legislation related to concealed carry. And within that legislation, given the sausage making that legislation can be, somebody put in a 10-day window for municipalities to pass assault weapons bans. So in June of 2013, Highland Park, I was the mayor, still am the mayor, passed an assault weapons and large capacity magazine ban. We got sued by the NRA. We were taken all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Our law prevailed. That law was still in place when this happened last year. From that point, when it was recognized that our law was constitutional, I already was an advocate and was already pushing for at least a statewide ban, if not a federal ban, and had been frustrated that year after year after year, I was pursuing the Illinois General Assembly and no action was being taken. So in the immediate aftermath of our situation, we said, you know what? I mean, literally the governor came within an hour. I had written him a letter in May following the horrific shooting in Uvalde saying, can we please, as a state, take action? So that had been 6 weeks prior. I showed him the letter that I had sent him on my phone, and he said, I'm here to bring my condolences. Are you lobbying me? And I said, I am. What's it going to take? Let's get this done already. And so from there to January, they passed a statewide assault weapons ban. That being said, I had the opportunity to speak with the president on the 4th and then again a week later. And I repeated my request and he said, I agree with you, as did the vice president who came to our city on July 5th. So we know the American people want an assault weapons ban, at least 61% in the last poll by Gallup. It's time for Congress to recognize that they represent us and take the necessary action.
How has your community changed since last year? Do you see it being a closer net community, a community that is more concerned about safety than before?
It's impossible to go through this kind of a terrorizing event and not have that trauma living within you. There's just no way. And so for so many people, there were concerns about groups. There were concerns about loud noises. I've talked to hundreds of people about the post-traumatic stress they all are feeling. I experienced it. You know, family members were in the parade or across the street from the parade where the shooting happened. We've all talked about it's we're human beings. There's no fighting it. There's no reasoning out of it. It just comes with this sort of horror. But we've done a lot to kind of give people the chance to come together and to feel more secure. This past 4th of July was unbelievably, you know, security driven, necessarily so. And I was so relieved to see the thousands of people who felt safe enough to come together to continue on this journey towards recovery. We had thousands of people who gathered for the remembrance, thousands who participated in our walk to reclaim the parade route, thousands who came out in the evening to celebrate the 4th of July. And I've now heard from many people that said, this was very helpful for us to gather together. But recognizing that for so many, it still was too soon. And we know that thousands also were only able to participate online because they still weren't comfortable. Personally, I've walked several people down the street to the site because they just couldn't go there themselves. So I would take them, we would go arm in arm or holding each other, holding hands, and then we would just walk and breathe and talk about their own experience, sit in that space and kind of bring back, it's right in the heart of our downtown, bring back that chance to be back into the middle of the city.
One of the purposes of this podcast is to give some advice. And sadly, mass shootings continue to happen on a weekly basis. And for local leaders that may be listening to this podcast, who find themselves in a similar situation, looking at these tragedies and of death and injuries, what advice would you give them? And what do you wish you'd known going into this crisis that you face?
I think the most important thing that people can recognize is the individuality of the experience, both for yourself and for those who have been most impacted. And by that, I mean people who have experienced this already had their life histories with them when they went through this. So some will reach resilience much quicker than others. Some will be forever changed physically and how that cruelty takes its steps going forward, whether it's one towards devastation or, and I've heard tons of stories of marriages breaking up in the aftermath, and others who have leaned into it from a positive, well, this is where we're going now, and now how do we pursue the rest of our lives? So it's very important, I think, for people to recognize everybody's not going to be happy with you. You're going to do your best. You're going to have to recognize that the emotionality of what your constituents, what your residents are working through will show itself in many different ways. Here's a great example. A really fascinating artistic memorial sort of sprang up in the immediate aftermath, and it turned into this huge community project. There was a lot of art. People could write postcards to one of the victims who had survived but had received horrible grievous injuries at a very young age. But it's on the bus route for several students to go to the high school. It's on the running route for the cross country team. It was on the main entry into our downtown, and people who wanted to just go get a cup of coffee could not get a cup of coffee without being reminded that this had happened. And so we had this balance we needed to strike of this gathering place, this healing place. Somebody had set up huge pictures of the deceased. Well, in one culture, that was wonderful. In another culture, that was horrific. So striking that balance and having that opportunity for people to understand that for those who this was positive, there were others for whom this was a real negative, and sort of threading that needle, striking that balance. And all of that, I mean to say, is everybody's different. People are going to react differently. They're going to recover or not differently. They're going to need different things in the immediate aftermath. Recognize that about yourself as well as about your community, and make peace with the fact that there are going to be people who react extremely in either direction in the immediate aftermath and in the months that follow.
Mayor, I got to tell you, what a blessing it was to meet you. And the minute I met you at this conference in Berlin, I came back to my team and said, we have to get Mayor Rettering here on this podcast, because she has a human side of the tragedy. She has an organizational response side of the tragedy, but she keeps leading her community. And so I admire you so much. You're one of my sheroes, even if you don't want.
Delighted to know you as well.
but I have to say thank you on behalf of the National League of Cities and all of our members for what you're doing and your advocacy. It's needed in our country right now. And if you want something done, get a local leader and they will get it done. So thank you so much for your time, Mayor.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'm so happy to know you.
Next, you'll hear from Councilmember Henry Lowe from Monterey Park, California.
Councilmember, let me just first say thank you for your incredible leadership, and thank you for being here today to speak with us and the leaders all over America.
Thank you, Clarence. And again, thank you very much for inviting me to your podcast and for the opportunity to share my experiences of how our community weathered that tragic event earlier this year.
How is your community doing afterwards?
I think emotions are still very raw for many people because it's been a little over 4 months since the shooting had occurred. And, since that time, we've been plotting our path forward of recovery, of making sure that those in our community who are still feeling the impacts, the consequences, are given to the support they need.
Now, it's interesting when I think of you and your leadership experiences, I think of your journey to public service. And one of the things that I've learned about you is that you've called your journey and your life experience that it's the embodiment of the American dream.
I am the son of immigrants. My parents came to the United States, like many immigrants, looking for better opportunities for themselves and their families. And I grew up in Los Angeles. I grew up in the Los Angeles community of El Sereno, which is in northeastern Los Angeles. But for communities like Monterey Park, which is right next door, it was where they often did their personal business, errands. They had friends who lived there. And and everyone has, I think, their idea of what the American dream, the ideal is. And I think for my parents, Monterey Park was that ideal because here was a community with a large Asian population, with businesses, services that they are able to access because you had people who ran these businesses who were themselves also probably immigrants or children of immigrants like myself. And so therefore, there was the language accessibility, the cultural competency. I guess it was in their mind, you know, like achieving that American dream, that idea of why they came to the United States in the first place.
Yeah, that's a great story and a great, as I call it, journey into public service. And I'm sure your parents are very, very proud, as many of your residents are proud of what you have done during your 20 years of service. You know, I want to talk a little bit about that day and what happened. You know, we hear a lot about mass shootings far too often in America. And I wanted to ask you, if you don't mind, what were those first few hours upon learning about the shooting and days after like for you as a leader and you as a council member?
Just a shock. You know, I think no community ever thinks a mass shooting will ever happen to them. You know, the shooting had occurred at 10:21 p.m. And I myself probably started getting texts from people forwarding tweets, people asking, hey, what's going on? Because suddenly, you know, we're hearing sirens and helicopters, and we're receiving on social media tweets and posts about people saying there was a mass shooting. And I think probably within 20, 30 minutes, I was able to get a hold of our city manager, and I realized something was going on. Something awful had happened. And I remember sitting in my living room and just trying to ascertain what had happened, you know, and I could hear helicopters thrumming overhead. You know, my concern was, well, you know, are there casualties? Our first responders, our police and fire, you know, are they okay? Because I understand that within the first 911 call, they responded within minutes. And then probably within an hour or two was then I started receiving calls from reporters. Those hours, I remember, you know, the evening turned into the morning, and I think 8 a.m. is when we had our first press conference with our city council president, our police, our fire, the sheriff department, Sheriff Luna, to give an account of what they knew based on the investigation so far. And I think, you know, that whole night and morning, as I sat on my couch, even as I was standing at the podium for the press conference, I just kept asking myself, what happened? The next 24 hours was continued briefings about the information that we knew about the shooter. And it was also then later that we learned that the shooter had proceeded to another ballroom. You know, he had committed his heinous act at the Star Ballroom, and then he proceeded to the Lilac Ballroom in Alhambra, which is sitting north of us. You know, to some degree, it all seemed very blurred, because I know in less than 24 hours, the police was able to locate the shooter.
You know, it's interesting when a crisis like that occurred, you know, as the mayor, you have to act fast. I mean, you got to work with law enforcement. You got to try to help stop the shooter or apprehend the shooter. You have to work with first responders, victims' families, the media. You have to manage a lot as mayor. So let me ask you, how did it change you as a leader or as a person? How did it impact you? This incident,
it's changed me in that I have now, you know, come to realize that when you're in these positions of leadership, you know, there are the issues that you run for, and usually they're everyday issues, you know, quality of life issues, traffic, public safety, the potholes, you know, the street, you know, but I think the reality now for any elected official, and it's a uniquely American reality, is that you now need to be prepared for mass shooting incidents as part of your list of things to be ready for.
I think the kind of experience being a leader doing such an event, a crisis, a mass shooting, will forever change one, the leader, you personally, but your community as well. And so as you move through this process of creating a healing community, can you talk about some of the ways that you have done that and your city as a whole has helped your residents to move through this?
This is where I do have to just give my thanks to everyone that rushed to our aid, the county of Los Angeles and the city of Los Angeles, working with the State Office of Emergency Services, ATF, one of the community-based organizations, the Los Angeles Chinatown Service Center. They've set up counseling services, which they continue to provide to this day, in partnership with our city library, our fire personnel, our police, to make sure, you know, is everyone okay? Because we want nobody to be processing, to be healing alone. We make sure that we are doing this together.
What advice would you give a municipal leader, a community? What would you wish that you would have known about handling such a crisis?
You know, I think the reality today in the United States is that as city leaders enter office, their communities, no matter how quiet and safe they think they are, may at any time become the next scene of unspeakable violence. I mean, just recently, we, you know, were horrified to what happened in Allen, Texas at a mall. Mother's Day was also the 1-year anniversary of the shooting in Buffalo. I mean, I could go down the list. You know, I've been talking to people from Newtown, from Sandy Hook. And so I think that that's just a reality now, which you have to be prepared for.
Well, City Speak listeners, you have been honored to have a great leader in America, a leader who led through crisis and still believes in the American dream and believe in healing and moving forward. And that's Councilmember Henry Lowe of Monterey Park, California. Councilmember, thank you so much for reliving some of what you experienced on that horrible day. And we hope that no other leader, no other city will experience mass shooting. But if they do, I hope they have a leader like you to help them process this and go through the healing process. So thank you so much for your time.
Clarence, thank you so much for this opportunity to come to today's NLC podcast. And, you know, it certainly has been very challenging in the past few months for myself and our community and my colleagues. But I'm just so proud of how we have all rallied together. Yes, this is a new reality. And I hope that all of us as city leaders we'll always reach out in our time of need to support each other.
And please know, Councilmember, that the National League of Cities stand with you in helping in any way we can. Stay strong and know that we are with you.
Thanks for listening to City Speak with Clarence Anthony. If you like the show, let us know. Share this episode with your friends and make sure to subscribe. We're curious to hear what you think, what you want more of, and how we can improve. If you have feedback or an idea for a guest you'd like Clarence to sit down with, send us your thoughts at cityspeakpodcast@nlc.org. Join us next month for a new episode. Like and subscribe here or wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.